Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is time now for our August edition of PMC Live. The monthly show is a collaboration between KFSK News and the Petersburg Medical Center, focusing on different departments and new programs happening at the Petersburg Medical Center. Today, I am joined on Zoom teleconference by, let's see who's here. It looks like Phil just came on board. So Phil Hofstetter, the CEO of the Medical Center. Also, Kelsey Lamb, who is Public Relations Coordinator for PMC, and then a guest, I believe, from Anchorage, Wesley Dahlgren. I'm going to ask you in a minute if that's how you pronounce your name, but with the Blood Bank of Alaska. Today, we will be talking about a blood drive happening in Petersburg tomorrow and Saturday. And then I'd also like to talk about PMC's recent discussions with Search. I'm not sure if anybody has a preference on what we start with today.
Good morning.
Good morning. I can hear you.
Yeah, it's Phil. Yeah, go ahead and start with the blood bank. I'm excited about this, having the Blood Bank of Alaska coming in and providing this opportunity. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to get rolling.
Okay. Well, if we could start with you, Kelsey, just the nuts and bolts. The blood drive is happening here in Petersburg Friday and Saturday, correct?
Yep. And it's from 12 to 7. You can still register online, or they're welcoming walk-ins also.
Okay, and where is this happening? Where's the walk-in?
At the community gym.
Okay, all right. So noon to 7, Friday, Saturday, you can walk in, but you can also call and schedule an appointment?
Yeah, let me get that number. You could call 907-222-5630 to schedule. You can also go on our website and click the flyer for the blood drive, and there's an online registration form.
Okay, sounds good. Wesley, yeah. Did I introduce you correctly? How do you pronounce your last name?
You did. It's Dahlgren.
Yeah, Dahlgren.
You pronounced it perfectly.
Okay, great. I guess to just start off with, I don't know much about donating blood. And so why should people donate blood?
Well, you're not alone. Most of the general public do not realize that all the blood transfused in hospitals across the country comes from volunteer donors who take that time out of their day to come donate. And, you know, currently there is no substitute for human blood. They don't make artificial blood. So really, again, all the blood that's transfused comes from volunteer donors. And particularly here in Alaska, all the blood that we have is sent, all the blood that we collect in state is sent to statewide hospitals. So including there in Petersburg.
Okay. How much blood does Alaska need?
That's a good question. So the actual demand for blood can change from one day to the next. You know, just yesterday, for example, we had some multiple traumas throughout the state. So it can drastically change from one day to the next. So to put quantify it with a specific number probably doesn't do it justice, but we can always use more donors. And currently right now we are in need of blood donors.
Okay. So I guess these are all kind of definitely related questions. In terms of how long blood lasts in storage, on the shelf, say in a local hospital like PMC.
A lot of people, sorry to interrupt you if I did. Blood has a shelf life of 42 days. At least the red cell component of the blood has a shelf life of 42 days. The plasma is frozen and can last for a year. But the red cells are 42 days, and donors can only donate every 56 days. So there's always a need for donors.
Okay. And so I guess that sounds like you're probably always distributing blood throughout the state.
Every day. Every day, blood leaves our facility here in Anchorage and goes across the state, all over the state. We have a pretty good partnership with Alaska Airlines. And all the blood that's collected is sent to pretty remote communities. It's quite amazing when I started to work here and started to learn about the network of blood that gets transported throughout the state. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was wondering about, how fragile is it? Does it, I know even organs get flown different places, but how fragile is blood? Does it need a really specific environment to be transported?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we are a TSA licensed facility, so we can when we close the blood box, like that's what we refer to it as, I guess, blood box, blood shipment box, TSA will not open that box just because we are a licensed facility. However, that blood is pretty resilient as long as it stays within a certain temperature parameters. So as long as it stays in those parameters, it's not going to, I guess, go bad to say it like that. Really, it's kind of funny. A lot has changed in blood banking, but the use of ice when shipping blood has not changed. It's kind of interesting to see blood get shipped throughout the state in blood transport boxes using ice and Ziploc bags. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. So it needs to be cold.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. 42 days, and that's when the red cells start to deteriorate or die off?
Yeah. So the minute a needle goes into an arm, and we start collecting a unit, that begins the countdown to when that unit is going to expire. So 42 days from the moment it's collected, based on current good manufacturing processes or CGMP, we follow basically trackability and traceability. So for example, if somebody in Petersburg were to donate at that blood drive, I would know the piece of equipment that we use or all the pieces of equipment that we use to collect that donor, the staff member, basically be able to retroactively look at the questions that they answered, just in case that there's ever an issue down the road with either the recipient or piece of equipment that might not pass quality control. We can track everything, and it's quite remarkable just how I can get into the weeds on all of it. It needs to be done for the safety of the recipient, because at the end of the day, the number one goal is to have a safe unit that you would trust being transfused into a loved one.
Okay. So I guess that leads to the question, are there people who cannot donate?
There are, unfortunately. Only about 38, 40% of the population can donate. And there's a multitude of reasons why people can't donate. You know, certain medical conditions, travel to some malaria risk areas, things like that. So really, it's important to maximize the amount of donors that we do get, I guess, or those people who are eligible to come in and donate.
Okay. Well, you're just talking to a very general public right now of all ages and health, people with different health issues and healthy people. And, so if only about 40% of people can donate, what are you kind of generally looking for in the people that donate?
Well,
people that are listening, they could help them make decisions whether they can donate.
Yeah. So certainly if they have questions about their eligibility, I would encourage them, to go on our website, bloodbankalaska.org, or go ahead and give us a call at 222-5630. And if we can ask or answer specific questions they may have. The amount of criteria, and just because somebody has a certain medical condition, like diabetes, for example, people think that they can't donate if they have diabetes, which isn't true. You can donate if you have diabetes. There are donors here in Anchorage that once you become 76 years old, we require a doctor's note saying, you're okay to donate. So we have donors that get those notes from the doctors. It's healthy for them to donate, so they continue to donate. I guess, does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, maybe? Yeah. So there's no just kind of age cap off or anything. It's seniors are welcome.
Yeah. They are welcome. And even, if there's younger people, I believe it or not, we have a lot of high school age kids donate. And you can donate when you're 16 years old with a parental consent form. Donors can either get one of those at the blood drive or go on our website and get one of those as well. A lot of people, a good bulk of the donor base that we have is made up by high school and college age students.
Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. If I knew that, I would certainly have more more donors. I believe a lot of it is, when you're that age, you're maybe a little more exploratory, because I think a lot of people, needles freak people out, right? And in my case in particular, I donated for my first time in college, and part of it was I was curious about donating, so that's why I did it. And there was a blood drive on campus And that's kind of why I donated. And a lot of times people stop donating. Well, they stop donating because they don't think it's as important, or that maybe the blood type isn't making a difference, which is far from the truth. You know, in my time at the blood bank, we've been critical for every blood type you could imagine. So every blood type is used and sent across the state. And what's interesting, and I know people in Petersburg might not understand this, but just given the demographics of Alaska and just like how Alaska is, there's a good chance that some of the blood that is collected at that blood drive, obviously it's going to come to Anchorage, but then we ship it out after it's processed all across the state. So there's a high probability that some of that blood is going to go back to Petersburg. And that just shows you like how, one, Alaska is extremely isolated and we're almost on our own in terms of supplying Alaska blood. But people can make a huge impact just by donating blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I hear countless stories from, you know, even just today, you know, I'm downstairs talking to donors, and I always hear stories about why people donate, and you know, loved ones in car accidents or going through cancer treatments. And these family members believe in the mission of donating blood to save others because their loved ones were saved by others as well. And so, you know, it's kind of moving to hear stories like that. And, you know, when I have a bad day at work or there's a stressful situation, I always think about that. Like, why am I here? And you know, I'm here to serve the donors and for those recipients in the hospital. And that's, you know, makes it easier to stomach some of the bad days, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned blood type. And do people need to know their blood type?
No, that's a great question too, and I'm glad you asked. They do not. So every time a unit of blood comes in here, we treat it independently as if we've never had them as a donor. So they get their blood type each time and tested for the multitude of things that we test for, you know, certain bloodborne pathogens to make sure it's safe to get transfused. So they do not need to know their blood type. And then we inform them of their blood type after they're done. So, and I will say this from my experience talking to the general public on multiple levels, most people do not know their blood type.
Okay. And you mentioned unit of blood. How much blood is taken when somebody donates? Is it always the same?
Currently, yeah, it's always the same. So 500 milliliters of blood. And from that 500 milliliters, we can break it down into red cells, plasma, and then a certain clotting factor agent named called cryo. They can break that unit of blood down into that as well. So it's kind of remarkable that from one, well, it's a hermetically sealed vacuum sealed bag. Well, multiple bags. There's three bags on there. We call it a triple bag, and from that they can break it down into all these products. It's pretty remarkable because in my when I first started working at the blood bank 12 years ago, I believe we were the second blood bank in the country to make a switch to that blood bag to be able to collect and create a unit called cryo.
Okay. So you said 500 milliliters of blood. I don't know how many like cups that would be. I can't visualize.
That's a pint.
Oh, it's a pint. Okay. Yeah. Okay. A pint it would be donated. Okay. Well, we just had a caller call into the radio station with a question. John Haverlick called in and wants to know if those making blood draws for the blood bank have been vaccinated. I'm guessing he is referring to COVID vaccinations. Is there anything with COVID vaccinations and blood drives?
So I can certainly say that most of the staff we have at the Blood Bank of Alaska are vaccinated. We didn't mandate vaccines for our staff. However, most are vaccinated. Moreover, we still mandate masks for our staff and really social distance and sterilize everything after each donor.
Okay, so the staff mostly vaccinated, wearing masks, but you're not requiring donors to be vaccinated?
No, we are not. It's also masking is optional for donors as well.
Okay. All right.
Although we try to provide donors masks if they do not have them.
Okay. How does a person's body react to donating blood? Like, I understand that they, you know, they'll make more. How long does that take? And
yeah, that's a great question. So every body and everybody is different, I guess, if that makes sense. In particular, you know, some donors have no impact whatsoever. It's actually relatively healthy for them to donate. Some people, a minor percent, feel fatigued. In regards to the components in your blood, the minute you donate a pint of blood, your body starts to actually fill the void of that blood getting taken. So there's a lot of blood, like not necessarily in your veins, that's in like surrounding tissues of those veins that will then, I guess, help your body recoup that volume of blood. In return of, I guess, in regards to the components in the blood, it could take, generally the red cells are replenished pretty quick time. At worst, it would be 56 days, which is why there's a 56-day deferral period for the donors. Most people, however, that's an extreme situation. Most people, it's relatively quickly. I myself, every time I've donated, you know, the next day I'm able to go run relatively long distances and not feel really any ill effects from it.
Okay. I wonder
some components in your blood, like plasma and platelets, actually are replenished very quickly, within a week.
Okay.
Although plasma could take upwards of a month, but yeah, platelets are very quick to recoup.
Okay. So some things are, the second you take it out, it's being made again. And then, but the 56 days is probably just a safety net for the longest possible situation.
Exactly. It is a safety net. Worst case scenario for people. I myself kind of almost get a euphoric feeling after I donate. It feels like my body starts to ramp up. I don't know. That's just me though, but I've heard other donors explain that as well.
Yeah, I was kind of almost wondering, you mentioned maybe healthy. I was wondering if there could possibly be health benefits, like to have, I don't know, that much new blood being made or something.
Well, there are benefits. So some individuals need their blood drawn for therapeutic reasons. There's certain blood conditions where they need their blood drawn, and even things, you know, individuals may be taking certain medications where they're actually producing red cells as a byproduct of that, they need to get their blood drawn. However, I do know, you know, certain, well, I guess, yeah, those individuals usually get a prescription from their doctor to get their blood drawn.
Okay. So for Petersburg, people who want to donate blood on Friday or Saturday from noon to 7, how should they prepare?
That's a great question. So the first thing is make an appointment. Hopefully would be step number one. Step number two is to begin prepping for the donation by hydrating and eating meals. A lot of people don't think they need to eat before they come donate. However, you know, eating a good meal, you know, a good breakfast the morning of your donation, and a lunch if it's later in the day, certainly helps out. And certainly hydrating, hydrating, it helps with the donation process because your blood is then hydrated.
Okay. All right. And make an appointment. And then how long? So since it's happening from noon to 7, you know, some people might be working, but is that something where they can do it on their lunch break, for example? How long does the process take from like filling out the paperwork to being finished?
Well, so I usually tell people to give about an hour for the donation process. And you know, the longest part of the whole process is filling out the paperwork and answering the questions. The actual blood draw part is relatively quick. It's usually about 8 minutes long, sometimes even faster. I do, you know, if the Petersburg blood drive is very successful, and there's a lot of donors, which I hope is what's going to happen, you know, an hour would be what I would expect, and tell people to expect an hour if they come to donate.
Okay. Well, I've never donated before, and 8 minutes doesn't sound too bad of, needle in your arm.
No, it's not too bad, actually. It could be longer, which is why usually we tell donors to hydrate, because it seems to help with the flow of blood when they're hydrated.
Okay. Well, thank you for all of that information. Is there anything else that we need to touch on concerning the 2-day blood drive here in Petersburg?
I would just tell the community, thank you so much. They've been pretty welcoming to us. And this is, I've been at the blood bank for 12 years now, and this is the first time we've actually made it down to that community for various reasons. Usually it was shipping the blood out was the number one reason why we weren't able to come down. and just getting it back to get processed. But we are excited to be down there, and I know the team is very excited to be down in Petersburg.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us. And then moving on to Phil, do you have any updates for us? I know that there's, you know, many residents have yard signs that say we support search. And I, from what I understand, you actually talked to search recently about collaborations in the future for healthcare. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks. First, I want to just mention everyone should go out and donate some blood. So definitely I'm a huge supporter of that. I'm real excited about what the Blood Bank of Alaska is bringing to Petersburg. So thank you for participating. So a couple of things about the conversations, the community conversations are really about new facility and healthcare services, right? So those are things that we've been invested in, since I've been here. It's something we've been trying to do a lot with prior to COVID, with the community cafes, community conversations. We had, master planning that was completed by through funding with the Denali Commission. And then we had our town hall meeting in January of 2020, and then COVID hit. And so, kind of everything just got, pushed aside on that. And I think recently, if we sort of look at what's happening, we know those conversations started up again with the assembly and the board at the work session there in a few months ago in May. And, moving forward, one of the positive things that we have out of this is that, we pretty much are in agreement. We need a new facility. We have an aged facility after the master planning. And, I think a lot of the concern is how is Petersburg going to pay for that? And we sort of accelerated these conversations. Search was invited to an assembly meeting, and it seems like there's a lot of information, a lot of misinformation out there. And certainly there's this push to support a facility in here, that Search is interested in building. So I think the important thing at this point is to kind of pause a little bit and look at, hey, wait a minute, what do we have here as a facility? What do we need for healthcare services? What is Search willing to work with us on? I'm very much about collaboration, expanding upon existing services, and looking at ways that we can collaborate and partner and work together. Ideally, we would work with an organization that's established in Southeast, and if we can expand additional services, then that would be fantastic. So a lot of our conversations recently have been accelerated because of some of the conversations in town. And so we have met with Search, their business and program development individual, and just having some conversations like, hey, we have some common interests. How can we work together on this? How can we build some trust in the community between organizations? And how can we have some mutually beneficial result that ultimately, at the end of the day, will increase and improve healthcare services? So that's the starting point. I think what we need to do is really have some community conversations and dialogue that's productive and address some of the concerns in the community, looking at sort of the approach of how on what kind of healthcare services we need. And then really, ultimately at some point talk about what kind of, what does that mean from a new facility standpoint? And so I think identifying that, having the ability to talk to the community in various forms is something that our board and myself and the assembly are all very, very interested in. So that's sort of the starting point, I think, or restarting point, I should say. And we are looking at having a couple of deliverables here in the next couple of months. The first thing is that the last board meeting we had, the board created a community engagement committee. And through that committee, we are looking at very strong objectives to engage the community, basically. So what are some things that we need to answer? What are some concerns out there that we need to address? What are the health issues and concerns out there? And then how can we have dialogue with the community moving forward? And that could be, you know, re-engaging the community cafes, that could be downtown hall style meetings. But these are some of the objectives that we're intending on moving forward related to sort of this latest surge of questions. And then to kind of put a, on top of that, we also had good timing for a couple of things. We were required to do the community needs assessment, and coming out of COVID and with sort of this resurgence of interest in the facility, it was great timing to actually do that survey. We had a great response. And I think the first step is really an opportunity to present the results of that community needs assessment.
Okay. Yeah, you mentioned a little bit ago a concern about paying for a new hospital. And I was wondering, I mean, does PMC, besides search, if PMC was pursuing a hospital on its own, do you want residents to help pay for that new hospital, or what's your, you know, is that part of it?
Well, it's a great question. So from this conversations from the starting point when I came in here, I was adamant about not extending the cost to the community. That's something that is a last resort to me. It's not something I would like to do at all. So in order to do that, it's hard, you know, it's not easy. And I think it should be that way. You know, we have a vested interest in healthcare. Healthcare is valuable. It's an economic driver. It should not just be, a windfall of money coming out of the sky. And we also shouldn't ask taxpayers to pay for that, a full cost of the facility. So how do we do that? So we do have to do it in a very slow, methodical, organized approach. And the first step is recognizing that we need a new facility. That's like step one. Step two is, what are some things that we can do at the assembly level to approve basically like a site, you know, so the assembly and the borough has land. Can we actually look at sites? Can we evaluate sites? And can we get to the point where we would be quote unquote shovel ready? And so looking at the approach of let's get there, and then we build off of that, you know, and there's certainly some opportunities out there. We have infrastructure bill. We have Murkowski's support for the Senate appropriations list that she supported in the order of $8 million. So there are some opportunities out there that we can actually get to that phase to build off of that. And really it's an opportunity to drive questions into the community about our healthcare. You know, are we addressing healthcare? There's a lot of great things that are occurring in the facility, and how can we capitalize and build off of that? And actually, can we use a facility such as Search to extend and have some extensions into the network of specialties, you know, specialty care? There's so many opportunities around it. The opportunity for me is to really clarify some of the information that's out there and some of the opportunities. And not just look at it like the end result here. How are we going to get from, you know, Z when we haven't done A through, you know, Y first? So there's many, many steps to get there. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of greener pastures. You know, I think it's really easy to look at something and say, oh, that looks great. We can go down this road. In my mind, things that are worthwhile have to be hard, have to be difficult, and we have to engage the community in these steps. And I think that empowering the community and the board and the assembly and our staff in that process is really important.
So it sounds like there, in your mind, there is a possibility that residents wouldn't have to pay hundreds of dollars out of their pocket.
I'm not supportive of that. Let's put it that way. I am not supportive of going right to taxpayer, because again, that seems like it's cutting corners as well. I feel like that as a community facility, there should be some state investment, there should be some federal investment, and there should be some search investment. I believe that that's also a representation of our tribal organization. I think that's very important in our community. Having appropriate representation in the form of a new facility is absolutely critical.
Okay. And you did mention the infrastructure bill. I was going to ask you about that because, you know, what we're hearing is literally billions for Alaska. And I was wondering your thoughts on it. I mean, the timing of this project happening now with what's going on in DC.
Correct. Yes. Again, you know, if we're divisive in our community, we won't even have a chance at funding. We have to agree that this is the method we want to go, and then maybe we have a chance of obtaining some funding. That's been my approach all along. And to that point, we have to get we have to agree on things such as new facilities, such as this is what's needed in the community. So that's valuing healthcare, valuing the economy, valuing the health services, and the delivery of those health services in the community. So it's very important that we agree on these things. And that's at that point, we can then turn to some of the funding that's available and advocate for that infrastructure.
Okay, so next step, community involvement, feedback, input, town halls or whatever might happen.
Correct. We're also I met with our board chair, and we're really, our board is very involved, very much also wanting not just my voice, but the board is going to be out there talking with the community as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time. Anything else we need to touch on?
No, thank you very much for the opportunity. And I, again, go out and donate your blood.
Okay.
Yeah, Angela, can I jump back on?
You bet. Kelsey.
I just wanted to say thank you to Blood Bank of Alaska. I've been on a few calls, and there's a lot of communication and coordination that happens to make sure that everything and the people get here and then that the blood gets back on time. So I appreciate all the work they're doing to make sure we are able to donate. And thanks for Wes for jumping on. I learned a lot from your guys' questions and conversation. So, and Hammer and Wecon and Papa Bears are going to drop off some cookies and fruit and crackers for all the donors, so they have a little fuel for after they're done. So we appreciate those sponsorships.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks so much. This wraps up PMC Live. Our guests were Wesley Dahlgren with the Blood Bank of Alaska, Phil Hofstetter, and Kelsey Lamb with PMC. If you missed any of the show, you can find it later. We'll post it on our website, kfsk.org. PMC Live airs the first Thursday of each month at 12:30. Stay with us. We're going to have music coming up with Britton Erickson as our host for Street Beat.